Coming off a victorious second term election, Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg was immediately confronted with leading his city's efforts on confronting the COVID-19 virus. Mayor Steinberg joins us today to talk about the city's efforts, his second term, and what he thinks the future of Sacramento looks like. Mayor Steinberg, what are the major issues that Sacramento's confronting with regards to the pandemic?
Well, Sacramento is confronted with the same issues that the state, the country, and the world are facing. Of course, first and foremost, we are confronting the reality that if we don't take the drastic measures that we have taken to essentially shut down much of society and the economy, that we face a great risk of many more people getting sick and dying and our hospital systems being overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. The good news is that Sacramento, like the rest of California, has done a tremendous job in doing the right thing by complying, by and large, with the physical distancing requirements put forward by both the state and the county. And as a result, we have not had that surge. The number of infections, the number of hospitalizations, and the number of deaths have been relatively low. Now, every life lost, 40-some-odd lives lost, is a tragedy. And people who've gotten sick, of course, that's a terrible thing. But compared to what we expected, given the modeling, Sacramento has done remarkably well on the health side. But now the conversation, frankly, and the work shifts not completely from the health issues, because we have to make sure that as we return, that we do so in a way that continues the success we've had on the health front. But now it's all about the economic recovery, because you can't shut down society and businesses for a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks without there being significant damage. And so this is now where much of my focus as the city's mayor evolves to.
And it's interesting you raise that in terms of your focus. I'm curious, what role does the city and you as its leader play in what appears to be kind of a layer cake of folks that are involved in confronting this issue? And that's ranging from the city, the county, the state, and upward from there.
Well, it's really an interesting question, because I have led through a number of crises during my public service career, where I think my actions and my decisions had a direct cause and effect on the outcome. What is different about this is although I, as the mayor, and our city have a great deal of authority when it comes to mitigating the impacts of the crisis, we actually don't have much control over the health aspects of the crisis. The county is the public health agency for the city and county of Sacramento and the other cities within the county. The state of California, of course, through its public health emergency powers, is creating the umbrella and, of course, leading the state when it comes to the public health directives, the stay-at-home orders. And so part of my job is to be the face of the city, certainly, to be the spokesperson who both reassures, informs, and urges people to do the right thing. I'm in constant contact with our county officials. We're working better together than I think we ever have. Everyone is pulled together in a real way, but the city is not the public health agency, but yet we are expected, and rightfully so, to respond to every part of this crisis. And I'm proud to say that the city is actually holding up very well. And in fact, we are convening, intervening, pushing, prodding to address every aspect of relief when it comes to this unprecedented situation.
When you say that the city's holding up very well, It appears from news reports, from anecdotal conversations and the like, that there are almost like two tiers of the public. In one part of the public, there are those who, for, you know, whatever, however they're situated, have been able to either shelter in place and continue working, have the means by which to sort of work their way through. But what do you say to the individual who is a week to 2 weeks out of running out of money and running out of resources to feed their family about what their prospects are, both short-term and long-term?
Well, I think it's the question of the moment here. There's no doubt that the impact of this crisis affects everybody from an emotional perspective, from a financial perspective. Certainly, you think about parents now who are teaching their kids at home while they're trying to work from home, and the unending stress on a lot of families, regardless of their economic situation in life. But there is also no question that the coronavirus has illuminated and in many ways exacerbated the inequities that already exist within our community when it comes to people who and communities who are already struggling. We know, for example, that nationwide that the African American community suffer a higher rate of death when it comes to the coronavirus. But we also know that when it comes to the economic impact, that it is our communities of color, it's our undocumented immigrants, it's those small businesses along some of our smaller commercial corridors that are in fact feeling it the worst, because as much as the federal stimulus package, the Paycheck Protection Program has helped a lot of businesses, there are a lot of people and businesses who were left out. When you add to that the working people who work in many of these businesses, who have been laid off, the impact has been disproportionately felt by people who can least afford it. So now it's our job to do everything we can with all the tools that we have to try to respond to that economic crisis. And we do have some opportunities, and we are working at every level to assure that we have as many resources as possible to be able to help people in real need.
You know, in hearing your response to those individuals and families that are at the end of their ropes, it reminds me that what you are known for, as much as any of your other accomplishments, is your leadership on mental health, even when it wasn't popular to be a leader on that issue. How do you think, based on all your years of experience, how do you think mental health needs to be addressed with the recovery of all of us as individuals from this pandemic?
Well, if COVID-19 is the pandemic, I fear that mental health is going to be the next epidemic, because of what has happening in real time to people's lives and the amount of anxiety, the amount of depression for people who have existing mental illness and serious mental health conditions, exacerbating the stress that they already have, making it worse. And so the existing system, which helps a lot of people, is already has fewer resources than the demand prior to COVID-19. And now we're going to have this extraordinary demand, I believe. We've seen, for example, that suicide prevention hotline calls are way up. Some of the state and community warm lines for people to call and be able to talk to somebody, those calls are way up. And so I think it's time actually to democratize the mental health movement in California. What do I mean by that? I think we can all be providers. With a little bit of training, we can recruit more people, either in a paid context or even as volunteers, to be able to be accessible and available to people who need someone to talk to. You know, the root of mental illness, a lot of it, is isolation and loneliness. And to the degree that we can stand up some more opportunities to broaden who can be considered a provider when it comes to mental health care and treatment, at least in the most basic sense, to listen to somebody, we're going to be able to help more people.
Interesting. You know, all of us, I think part of what you're saying in there is that we're all going to change. We're all being changed by this experience going through it. How do you think Sacramento is going to be changed and different coming out the other side of this?
Well, certainly, I know for myself, and I think for most people, we are never going to take for granted. I'm never going to take for granted again what it means to be among and together with my community. I will never take for granted again what it means to be able to go to the theater or a sporting event, what it means to go to one of those, what seems like unending of fundraising dinners for a community organization, what it means to be at a political rally. I don't think I'll ever take that for granted again, because sometimes, you know, you get tired and you say, oh, another one. Well, this experience, I think, has taught us all the importance and the value of being connected, and yes, being physically connected to one another. I know I miss it. And so I think there's going to be a gratitude about sort of the everyday things that we do in life that sometimes may feel like a bit of a hassle, or do I have to? Now we're going to be, man, how lucky I am to be able to be out among the people of Sacramento. Beyond that, I am confident that for a variety of reasons, Sacramento is going to recover, and we are going to regain that momentum that is unstoppable around building the kind of cosmopolitan, destination center, inclusive city that Sacramento is becoming, and is becoming to an even greater extent. There is an excitement about this city, about our values, about how we treat people, but also about our potential to grow in the right way that I know is going to continue. And, you know, we've gotten a couple lucky breaks here when it comes to federal stimulus, when it comes to, I think, the ability to recover faster than we might otherwise be challenged with. I have no illusions about the amount of pain and suffering out there, or what it's going to take for small businesses, for retailers, for a lot of sectors of our economy to recover. But I know Sacramento will be poised more than a lot of other places to recover faster and to continue on the trajectory that we've been on for a number of years.
When you talk about some lucky breaks that we've had, tell us more about that.
Well, a couple of things. So cities throughout the state and the country, including Sacramento, are going to experience a deep decline in our revenue to support our city services. Sacramento, though, is lucky because in 2018, we passed this additional half-cent sales tax. And though the money is intended and will eventually go back to being used to invest in our communities for what we call inclusive economic development, affordable housing, investing in small business, workforce development, youth investments, for now, that money serves as a cushion to ensure that we don't have to issue massive layoffs or layoffs at all, or make dramatic cuts to our city services. Then the question is, all right, how do we then fulfill the promises that I made and my colleagues made to actually use the public dollar to invest in economic empowerment and economic improvement in our communities? Well, if there was ever a doubt that growth, sustainable growth, is a good thing, how about this fact? Sacramento received a check last week for $89 million from the federal government. And why? Why did we receive that check? because our population threshold exceeded 500,000 people. The cutoff for the federal stimulus was 500,000. Now, if you look back to 2010 through 2020, we weren't always above 500,000. We were actually significantly less, but because we've grown in the right way, we got lucky, we exceeded that threshold, and now we have $89 million to actually be able to invest in our communities. It has to be related to COVID impacts and COVID response, but it allows us to find that integration, that overlap between what we started with Measure U and the economic consequences and suffering in real time that businesses and people are living through, and to be able to invest strategically in our economic recovery. And so none of this is perfect, but Sacramento was prepared and we're well positioned, I think, to move forward.
This opportunity brings to mind the old adage that sometimes in chaos and the creativity that results leads to new ways of looking at old problems. Are we learning anything through going through all of this together and through all of the things that you and the people that advise you are taking in terms of information on how we might really transform how we look at and address some of the problems we've been facing?
Well, I think this period of time has shown us that if we choose to move faster, if we choose to be nimble, if we choose to break down some of the jurisdictional artificial boundaries that sometimes prevent us from acting quicker, that we can do more and we can do more faster. And I think this has created some relationships among and between our various levels of government and neighboring governmental jurisdictions that I hope will carry over post-COVID, because we don't have to never want to say, well, that's their responsibility or that's just our responsibility. All of what we do as public, the public doesn't care in the end whether or not something is a state responsibility, a county responsibility, or a city responsibility, or a school district responsibility. They just want to see progress. And I think this situation has forced everybody to look at the way they work with one another and with the community a little bit differently, and I in a positive way, with greater urgency. And like I said, I hope that that carries over. I'm confident we'll carry over when we move on.
Do you have a preferred timeline or just any sort of mental timeline in your head as to when it is that you would like to see certain aspects of the city and the region turn back on?
I wish it were last week, but I also have been very clear that I support the governor and the county stay-at-home orders, because the dilemma here that we face together is that while we are all desperate, and especially those who are genuinely desperate, those small businesses and working people, to get back, if in fact we go back in a way that is irresponsible and it leads to an outbreak, then what will happen is the stay-at-home order in the more restrictive way will be imposed, and it'll be that much longer before we can, in fact, get back. Having said that, there is no question that the debate, or if you will, or the discussion has turned over the last number of days, because people are getting impatient, understandably so, and especially small businesses and people who can't afford to pay their May rent, their May mortgage. They are pushing and pushing hard. And so what the governor is doing and what I am urging is a gradual return. He laid out a four-stage process where some offices can open, where some retail can open, so long as the appropriate physical distancing is practiced and you have a little bit more personal protective equipment and we get those testing numbers up. At the stage after that are hair salons, maybe restaurants, and we all want to move as quickly as possible. And it changes in real time depending upon not only the numbers we see in Sacramento, but the numbers in California and the experiences of places around the country who have opened up faster than we do. It's a really, the frustration I have, and that everybody is that I cannot give a definitive answer to that question. When will we open? Because the desire is to open right away, but we have to do so in a way that is smart so that we, one, save lives, protect people's health, but also don't find ourselves economically in even a worse situation long-term because we moved too quickly.
Sure. I want to turn to your reelection. Congratulations on being reelected in the first place.
Well, thank you.
But beyond that, though, so obviously the residents of Sacramento gave you a passing grade. What grade would you give your first term?
Oh, wow. That is a tough question. So I would say, because I'm a tough judge of myself, I would give myself a B+. Now, you know, I might argue with the professor for an A-, but I would say a B+, because I think that not just I, but my team and my colleagues on the city council and the community, we have laid a great foundation for continuing to move Sacramento in the right direction. We're growing the economy, whether it's, you know, Major League Soccer, the rail yards, the waterfront, the continued growth and evolution of Sacramento's food scene, a commitment to inclusion, where we're very intentional and deliberate now about having a plan. And yes, it's shifting a little bit again because of COVID-19 and now the federal stimulus in terms of how we will do it, but a real commitment to investment and inclusion. And then, of course, on the homeless front, while we are long way from there, even COVID-19 now has given us an unprecedented opportunity to work with the county. We have 990 beds now, or rooms, stood up as a result of COVID-19, over 800 motel rooms, the trailers out at Cal Expo. We're using this opportunity in real time to get as many medically fragile people indoors and to keep them indoors. And so the additional term for me will enable me and my colleagues, I think, to take this very solid foundation and to actually get even greater results and to break ground and to see the opening of Major League Soccer and that development and evolution of the rail yards and the continued revitalization of the downtown, and not a cure for homelessness, but an improvement. And then to ensure that we have a consistent way to invest in our neighborhoods and in our communities that I have promised to continue to uplift. I do none of it alone. None of it is perfect, but I think we have set a path. I know we have laid a foundation, and it's all about continuing the work. And you never end the work. You just continue to build and to grow.
So if you have any brief directions for your citizens on what role they can play in recovery, what is it?
Well, first of all, please donate. To donate for, that's number4sacramento.org, because we have raised over $1 million and we have put that to great use. We've helped 120 small businesses in our neighborhoods and commercial corridors, mostly minority-owned businesses. We've helped hundreds of families with cash grants, including undocumented immigrants. But we're running out. We need more resources. Beyond that, continue to be engaged in your community. Help us shape in real time how we invest this $89 million stimulus and surplus. Continue to treat each other with respect and kindness. Sacramento has always been known for a good heart, and I think that's helping us get through this. And and know that this is not a state of being that is going to last forever, that we will get beyond this and we'll look back and say, one of the toughest periods of our life, but we stood together, we did a lot to help people in need, and that we got right back to building the city that we all want to be and see.
And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.